ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today is January the 14th, 2019, according to the calendar which is most commonly used in the world. Today, we look forward to the day when Gaurabdha, the calendar which begins from the birth date of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, becomes the most well known. That will require, if that is to come about, a lot of preaching of Krishna consciousness, and of all the preaching of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada emphasized, there is no better way to preach Krishna consciousness than to distribute my books. So January the 14th, and during the month of December, throughout much of the world, devotees make a very special effort for distributing the books of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The December book distribution marathon, which came about in the early 1970s when devotees being pushed and encouraged by Srila Prabhupada to distribute his books, discovered that the Christmas season in America was very good for distributing books, the days before Christmas, December the 25th, because it's a time when people spend money, they tend to be in a good mood, a generous mood in America and other Western countries that celebrate Christmas. So it's people, when you offer them something to sell them something or give in charity, they're more inclined to give. So it became a very good time for distributing books, and therefore devotees would stay out longer hours, and the shops were open, especially the last few days before Christmas. The shops were late, open very late, because it's a good time for the shops to make sales also. So devotees would stay out late, and lots of books were distributed, and devotees put in extra time and energy, and it became a standard thing that throughout December, especially up to Christmas Day, devotees would do what they call the December book distribution marathon. Has become a tradition in ISKCON. Here in India also, there's no particular reason to do it in December, because Christmas isn't such a big festival here, and even those who do celebrate it are mostly Christians, and then they're not the best customers for our books. There is what is mistakenly called Gita Jayanti, also falls in December every year. It means the day of the appearance of the day on which, or the anniversary of the day on which Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. So on the plea of that, can distribute more Bhagavad Gitas. Otherwise, there's no particular reason. There's nothing really equivalent to Christmas in terms of getting people to give more in charity. There's no prolonged period of time like that in India. Anyway, in India also, and in many countries throughout the world, devotees go on book distribution marathon and undertake many austerities to do so. Going out in Russia, whew, in that cold. Amazing austerities the devotees undertake. And some parts of of North America are as cold as Russia also. In the northern states of the USA and in Canada, extremely cold, but still devotees go out and distribute books. So I've been receiving reports from some of my disciples who have been doing that during the December month especially. I asked devotees to send me some reports of the books they're distributing, what they're doing, and I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank you all on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. You don't really need me to thank you because you're getting Prabhupada's mercy, but as many of you have accepted me as The representative of Srila Prabhupada, under, I'm still looking at this, under whom you are taking your guidance in spiritual life, then you may be happy to know that, well, I'm happy that you're distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and I can simply encourage you to go on doing so. And I'm sitting here writing books based on Srila Prabhupada's books. The book I'm mostly working on now is The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada, many, many quotes from Srila Prabhupada, outlining exactly what he wanted for his movement. As it's to go on in the future, Srila Prabhupada started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He expected it to go on for many, many years after his departure from this world, and he gave the instructions and the framework for doing so. So in that book, there are many, many sections of that book. One of the sections is the specific programs that Srila Prabhupada gave us, and he did give many programs for our engagement in Krishna consciousness, for preaching Krishna consciousness. And he said that, he repeatedly stressed the importance of book distribution. Sometimes he'd say the Gurukul is the most important program. Sometimes he would say this preaching to scientists is the most important program. They're all the most important. But there's no doubt that Srila Prabhupada emphasized this distribution of his books. He very much wanted that. He was very much pleased with that. He pushed his disciples to do it, and that's still going on. And let it go on. I send those who have sent me their reports, I can simply say to you, good, double it. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. You should double your book distribution every year. Which, if that was to be literally true, then knowing the story of the one grain of wheat on the first square of a chessboard and two on the next, that's not exactly double, but if you then two and then four on the next, then 16 on the next, and 64 on the next, and then 64 by 64 on the next, which I can't work out in my head just now. But there wouldn't, on the last square, there wouldn't be enough grains of wheat in the whole world. So to double it, yes, it's a great challenge and a very blissful challenge. Give me that green file. So Srila Prabhupada, he was amazing. He did so many amazing things. He got his disciples to do so many amazing things. And now we've heard of it, and we just take it, we tend to take it for granted. When we were, I joined this movement in 1975. I was allowed to join. Devotees were very kind to allow me to join this movement. And it wasn't like nowadays where you get news instantly, but news would generally go around the world. It would take a few days, usually at least, to find out what Srila Prabhupada was doing or the things that he'd said. Because Srila Prabhupada was always doing amazing things, saying amazing things, writing his books, actually dictating his books, and all kinds of revelations. And it was very exciting because we had the mood that we're going to change the world. Krishna consciousness is going to change the world. We were very aware that the world situation is a complete mess. I saw some time ago someone had written in a newspaper a report about England in the 1970s, and they were writing how it was so much better at that time. But at the time, we were thinking it's a complete mess. And because the world situation got so much worse now, but at that time also, people were very concerned with the whole situation in the world. And Krishna Consciousness Movement, we had this very strong faith inspired in us by Srila Prabhupada that if we go on distributing these books and go on preaching Krishna Consciousness, then the whole world situation will change and people will take to Krishna Consciousness and be happy. So Srila Prabhupada, he was always doing amazing things, and his whole life was amazing. The very fact that he came to the Western world with nothing. I had 40 rupees, but he couldn't even change that, so it was useless. The 40 rupees he had was useless in America. He had faith in Krishna and the order of his spiritual master, and he came with nothing. He knew no one, and within 12 years he had started a movement that was widely recognized by, especially by scholars, as being a people who had actually studied religion and philosophy. Practically every one of them, they attested that this is a bona fide religious movement with ancient roots, and Hare Krishna, the words Hare Krishna were well known all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada did this after arriving in the Western countries with nothing, after having two heart attacks at the age of 69. Now, of course, we've all heard this before. We might even, heard it all before. But it's amazing. It should be amazing. If we hadn't heard it so many times, it should be amazing. We might not even believe it was true, if it wasn't true. And his schedule was amazing. What time did his day begin? Well, not really. He would rest at about 11 o'clock and get up at 1 o'clock, and he took a little nap after breakfast and a little nap after lunch, and he didn't sleep for any prolonged length of time ever. So when did his day begin? He was always busy. He was traveling all over the world, never appeared to suffer from jet lag, while the young people all around him were suffering from the young men he traveled with were suffering from jet lag. He didn't. And while everyone around him was sleeping at night, he'd be translating his books. He had a massive literary output even while he was traveling all over the world. Now, if the only thing he did in those last 10 years of his existence in this world, manifest existence, if the only thing he'd done was to produce so many books, that in itself would be amazing. But the fact that he did it while he was traveling all over the world with so many stresses and strains of a burgeoning movement and so many things going on, it's amazing. Simply amazing. How he was able to do that? He went to the Western countries. He had never been outside India, but he was able to catch the pulse of especially the young people in America, the young class of many people were searching at that time for a spiritual alternative. They didn't really have any idea what spiritual meant, but they were very discontent with the whole situation in the world. America, where Srila Prabhupada first planted this movement, America was at war, some meaningless war in Vietnam, meaninglessly killing Vietnamese people and having their own people killed. America's been doing that practically non-stop ever since then. But at the time, the young people were very disturbed by this, and they're very disturbed by the materialism that they saw all around them, and they were discontent with the predominant religion, Christianity and Judaism. Many were from Jewish backgrounds, because they saw the religion was just another factor in the materialistic way of life, and they were looking for something different. And Srila Prabhupada really caught that wave, and it was amazing how Srila Prabhupada was able to relate to these wild young people that respectable people in the West couldn't relate to. He was able to catch their pulse. He went to San Francisco, and for the first time, maybe the last time, in his life, he went to a rock concert. How can you imagine an Indian sadhu going to a rock concert? I mean, a real sadhu. You can imagine the bogus sadhus doing that, but a real sadhu, someone, he's very dignified, aristocratic, grave, very serious about his spiritual practices, and all of a sudden, he's in San Francisco in a wild, huge group of intoxicated young people or dancing with this heavy, loud music, and Prabhupada just fitted right in and got everyone to chant Hare Krishna. He caught their pulse. And he was able to inspire his followers to do such things as arrange that rock concert, which was a benefit concert for the Krishna conscious movement, in the Bay Area, where Srila Prabhupada studied there. And Srila Prabhupada inspired the devotees to do big things in San Francisco. Also, he started the first Rath Yatra festival in the Western world. Tremendous success right from the very beginning. People loved it. Even the police. The police, they were, the San Francisco police, all of a sudden, they had thousands of young, intoxicated, non-law-abiding youth on top of them. How do they deal with them at all? It was a big problem for them. And in Berkeley, just next to San Francisco, where they had the famous university there, that was famous for political demonstrations, and the police would go and they'd fight with the students. So the youth and the police didn't get on that well. But even the police liked the Hare Krishna movement, because they'd organize these festivals, and then all the young people would go and they'd all be peaceful and happy, and the devotees weren't anti-police, they weren't anti-anyone. And even the police, that sometimes they'd pick up some crazy intoxicated hippie in the middle of the night who was having a nervous breakdown, on drug-induced nervous breakdown, and just put them in the Hare Krishna temple. We call it a temple. some storefront which was converted and called the temple. It was a temple, but not in India what you'd recognize as a temple. And just say, hey, you better look after this guy. No one else can look after this. So even the police, they recognize this is something, very special. And then Srila Prabhupada said that many of the disciples at that time, they were sent by his Guru Maharaj to help him. And the Shama Sundar, especially from the very beginning, he organized that. He was one who organized that festival, in the Rath Yatra festival. And he had this ambition, let's do something big for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was inspiring them to do big things. And then, because he wanted to... He once told Harishwara Prabhu, I want to spread Krishna consciousness widely, everywhere, all at once. And Prabhupada is very much in that mode. So he was doing amazing things, being empowered by Krishna. He sent three young couples to London, and their ambition was not exactly to start a temple, which they did do, but they're first and foremost, they wanted to meet the Beatles. The Beatles... It's difficult to communicate this to people who weren't there at the time, but they were so popular and so much part of the lives of young people. It was they were the biggest influence on young people in the Western world, in the English-speaking Western world, and even in countries of Europe and even Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain, they're immensely influential and unsurprisingly almost impossible to get in contact with. Because when people are so popular, it's very, very difficult to get close to them. But the three couples there, they wanted to meet the Beatles, and they did. Prabhupada empowered them, and especially George Harrison took interest, and then George Harrison and the Beatles took interest, and then the devotees with George Harrison, George Harrison was instrumental in their making a single record. It's difficult to explain, again, if you weren't there at the time, but the records were produced one at a time, actually two at a time, two sides of the record, the polymer vinyl record, which was put on a device, a gramophone. Have you seen that? You've seen it? Maybe in a YouTube video or something, but I think they were not, they were already out before, they were out of fashion. After that came the well, reel-to-reel tape recorders were there also, but then the small Walkman-type cassette recorders came, and then after that came all this MP3 stuff and all that. So they made a 45 RPM, revolutions per minute, record. And it's very simple. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And it became hugely popular all over the world. All of a sudden, people knew the Hare Krishna mantra. Just pew. It was unknown to widely known, largely due to George Harrison and Srila Prabhupada's empowering the devotees to contact him and inspire him. And later, George Harrison bought the Piggott's Manor in Lechmore Heath, just outside London. It sounds really English, Piggott's Manor in Lechmore Heath. And now that's Bhaktivedanta Manor. And that's been tremendously important in establishing the Krishna Conscious Movement in England. So that was done by the Srila Prabhupada empowering his devotee. Now, I'm not going to go in chronological order. Another thing, Srila Prabhupada, I just made a note of a few things. There are so many things. Oh, what about the paintings in Srila Prabhupada's books? The early paintings were a bit, you could say, almost childish looking, but Prabhupada liked them very much. And later on, some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, who he saw they had artistic talent, and he wanted them to paint paintings for his books, and they did, and they were published in the books. And later on, some of these devotees, they went on to become recognized artists, painting masterpieces in a new style, a new style of painting, showing pastimes of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's just amazing. These paintings are on the level of any of, I mean, I'm not an art specialist, but it can be seen clearly that they are a very, very high level of artwork. And these devotees, they never had training in art. They never took any training, but being empowered by Srila Prabhupada, by Krishna, via Srila Prabhupada, they're able to create masterpieces of Krishna art. So that was another aspect of Srila Prabhupada empowering his disciples. Srila Prabhupada went to Japan and met with the executives of the Dai Nippon Publishing Company, a major publishing company, and one of the major publishing companies in the world, because Srila Prabhupada had big plans to print his books in large quantities. Srila Prabhupada went there. he didn't have any guarantee of so much money, but somehow they were convinced enough to give him credit and print the books. How did he do that? These are businessmen. They were, as Japanese people, they're respectful to monks, but that doesn't mean they're going to extend tens of thousands of dollars. In those days, tens of thousands of dollars was a lot of money. They weren't going to just, but out of respect for a monk, they're not going to extend huge credit line. But Srila Prabhupada convinced them. Then Srila Prabhupada had to get his books distributed because he got all these big books printed. And no, actually, first of all, George Harrison arranged for paying for that Krishna book, the first book. But then Srila Prabhupada, after that, he got credit from Dai Nippon, this company. And then devotees had no idea how to distribute these books, but Srila Prabhupada empowered them, and soon they were distributing tens of thousands of books and hundreds of thousands of Back to Godhead magazine. And one print run, that must have been 1976, they print, I believe it was two print runs in a row, they printed in 1 month 1 million copies of Back to Godhead. And this Bhagavad Gita, they printed more than 1 million in a year. And they had it was reported that the train truck, there was like, I can't remember exactly, 70 wagons of paper for the printing. And it was the biggest printing in the history of America. And that was only one print run, and that was finished after a few months, and they had to print again. It was phenomenal how many books that were being printed and distributed. Unprecedented. And of course, the Bible is printed in huge quantities, but not sold. These books were being sold to the public. Another avenue for distribution was to scholars in libraries who were taking standing orders, because Srila Prabhupada was writing his books, and they were gradually being published. When I joined in 1975, we had the Srimad Bhagavatam up to the fourth canto. And after I joined, the fifth canto, and then other cantos came, and the Srimad Chaitanya Charitamrita came. So the devotees were going and showing, look, we got these books and more are coming, and taking standing orders that scholars in the universities would take Srimad Bhagavatam and say, yeah, and we'll take all the volumes in future also. How do you do that? That's empowered by Krishna, by Srila Prabhupada, to do amazing things. And devotees would go, they went behind the Iron Curtain in the communist countries, very dangerous to go, and they were taking standing orders there. They're doing all kinds of unprecedented and amazing things. Srila Prabhupada, he would dictate at night his books. He would read the Sanskrit verse, dictate the translation in English, and then he would read the commentaries of the previous acharyas on each verse, and then he would dictate in the dictaphone his purport. And in his purport, he would sometimes select something from the... Mostly he would select things from the previous acharyas and then present that in his own words, Krishna's words. Sometimes give some comment which some previous acharya hadn't given. So in this way, he was, night by night, he was dictating. One time, he was in Mayapur, and there was a whole display of his books there. And he mentioned to Shruti Kirti Prabhu, who was his traveling assistant at that time, you see, I produce all these books just little bit by little bit. Every night Srila Prabhupada would work on his books for 2, 3, 4 hours, just dictating like this. And doing that every night, almost every night, so many books became produced. But it happened in 1975 that Srila Prabhupada had been working steadily, but the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust had fallen behind in their production. Because once Srila Prabhupada dictated, then it had to be transcribed. The transcriber would listen to what Srila Prabhupada said, then type it out. Then it had to be edited from the rough spoken form into grammatically acceptable English. The Sanskrit required editing. Often the transcriber would misunderstand when Srila Prabhupada quoted Sanskrit words. So the work of the Sanskrit editors was very important. And they would also, Sanskrit, devotees who knew enough Sanskrit to do so, would also take the Sanskrit verses from the Gita Press edition or whatever, the Devanagari script, and it was had to be pasted on a block, on a board, and then they would have to be shot. There was a whole process. Nowadays, by computerization, is much easier. And then the diacriticization of the transliterated, the transliterations would have to be Sanskrit knowing devotees would have to put that in. So there's a lot of work to do, and then they have to be composed and laid out, and then artwork was required because Srila Prabhupada wanted new pictures in his books for every book. So it was a whole process. And devotees, at one point, I believe it was February 1975, they were 17 books behind Srila Prabhupada. 17 books. Because one reason for that is that Srila Prabhupada had also translated the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And after the Adi Leela was done, most of the rest of the Chaitanya Charita, even much of the Adi Leela, many of the verses didn't have purports. So that the work went much quicker than the Srimad Bhagavatam. And also, it went quicker for Srila Prabhupada to do it. And also, there are many, many verses, which each one of them, the Bengali writing had to be put in, and then the diacritical marks and everything. So that became slowed down, especially because at that time they had devotees who knew, a few devotees had developed knowledge of Sanskrit, so they could help with the Sanskrit work in producing Srila Prabhupada's books, but Bengali not so much. So the work had become clogged up, and then at one point Srila Prabhupada said that all of these books, 17 pending books, I believe it was 15 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, and 15 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita and 2 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam were pending. In those days, the Bhagavatam came out not in such big volumes as we have now. The first canto was in 3 volumes, the second canto was in 2 volumes, the third canto was in 4 volumes, the fourth canto was in 4 volumes, the fifth canto was in 2 volumes. So like that, they were somewhat smaller. So there were 17 volumes which were not yet published, which Prabhupada had done his work on, but the devotees were lagging behind. So then Srila Prabhupada said that all of these books have to be printed in 2 months. And Rameshwar Prabhu, who was the production manager at the BBT, his response was that it's impossible, Srila Prabhupada. And actually it was, because it took them so much time to get one book together, diligently working. It wasn't that the devotees were lazy and they'd fallen behind. They were just diligently working, but Prabhupada's output was not, it was too fast for them. So Srila Prabhupada very gravely said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And at that, that put the devotee, in other words, he didn't give them a choice. You have to do it. That was the implication. You have to do it. And they did it. They brought in devotees from all over the world to help. One of the devotees, I know, my good friend and senior godbrother, Ranchor Prabhu, he was an artist, so he was called in from England and to help with painting, because so many paintings needed to be painted. And I asked him later, because there's one very beautiful picture in the sixth canto of Mahavishnu with the universes emanating from him. And I asked him about that picture, and Ranchor Prabhu told me that Srila Prabhupada had said when he saw this, "Ah, at last Mahavishnu." So I said to him, "This is a very beautiful painting. You were there when this was done. Who painted that?" And he said, "Well, you can't really say who painted it. It wasn't like one artist did, because someone would do one part, and then someone else would come in and do something else. And then when that devotee just collapsed, fell asleep at the easel, because devotees were practically, they practically stopped eating and sleeping for days, for 2 months. So he told me, well, so-and-so did this, I did that, and then someone came in and did the finishing touches, and that was that painting. And it's a masterpiece, but you couldn't imagine that three or four devotees had worked on it. But it was like that. So they're working so hard, and they did it. And actually it was impossible, but by Srila Prabhupada's empowerment, they did it. And then on the last day, when they'd actually done it, they all came to Mangalarti. Most of them had missed Mangalarti for weeks, but not that they were sleeping through it or any such thing, but they would eat a little and work. And when they had no energy left in their body, they would just collapse, and that was it. And they'd chant 16 rounds. And maybe some of them put that aside for some time also. They were working so hard. But at the end, they were so blissful. They attended Mangalarti, and everyone was in ecstasy, feeling the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that they had done this impossible thing by the empowerment of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he did amazing things all the time. Gorgeous temples in India. No one was building temples in India except the Bielas. Srila Prabhupada reinstituted temple construction in India. It had been stopped practically. Srila Prabhupada brought money from the Western countries. How he struggled to have that temple built in Bombay. How he struggled. His disciples, they didn't want to stay in India. They wanted to leave. He practically forced them, "You stay, you work on these projects." Prabhupada had the vision how these temples, Vrindavan, Mayapur, Bombay, how they're going to develop. In some places, he practically had to force the devotees, and still they left. they went through such austerities to make those temples possible, and no one could imagine that in some field in Mayapur, a whole spiritual city is coming up. No one could imagine that this Vrindavan would become so popular like it has now because of Srila Prabhupada establishing that Krishna Balaram temple. No one could imagine that on that plot of land in Juhu that there would be such a beautiful temple. Srila Prabhupada could see it. He pushed his disciples to do it. But such amazing thing came up. In Detroit, there was a fabulous mansion, absolutely fabulous, ornate. The actual value was millions of dollars, but because it was in a bad area, no one wanted to buy it. So Srila Prabhupada, he offered, he went there and saw it and thought this will make a great temple. He offered $300,000. He said, "I'll give you $300 in cash." And immediately the owner agreed. And Prabhupada didn't have any money. He didn't know. He said, I'll give you $300,000 cash. He didn't have any money. But he made that offer and immediately accepted. And then Prabhupada asked his, he had two wealthy disciples, Lekha Shravanti and Ambarish. So he said, he asked them, can you give the money? Okay, they gave the money and they bought it. And it was a beautiful temple. Srila Prabhupada, he started off in a storefront. ISKCON was started in a storefront in New York. And in 1976, they had an 18-story building in downtown Manhattan, prestigious spot. These are the activities of an empowered acharya. Amazing. We say an empowered acharya, but there's no one in history who's done such things. It's just unimaginable. Personally, also, I said he would no jet lag. He arrived in 1973 after an overnight flight from Bombay. He had been very sick. He came, that was the day they were having Rath Yatra there in London. Srila Prabhupada came to the Rath Yatra. They weren't even sure if he was even going to go. And then they thought he'd just go and then maybe offer obeisance to Jagannath. Or maybe he would sit on the cart. But Prabhupada went in front of the carts and he joined in the kirtan and he started dancing. He danced non-stop all along the route, about 1.5 hours, dancing ecstatically. Even though he was sick, he was old, he was tired. This is a prakriti, beyond this material energy. Yeah, devotees taking austerity for distributing books. Prabhupada pushed them to distribute books. They'd go out, they'd spend, devotees would go out distributing books, sometimes more than 24 hours non-stop. They just go on, empowered by the spiritual energy. They just go on and on, and they didn't feel tired. He touched the hearts of so many people. His glance by his, he would look at people, he'd look right into them. Right into them. He knew just by seeing a person, he knew everything about them. So there are so many instances of Srila Prabhupada. Devotees understood. He knew what was in their mind. He could read their mind. He knew exactly what they were thinking. So we're all very, very fortunate. There must be so many things, right? So many amazing. Everything was amazing. But we're so used to hearing all these things, we just think, oh, yeah, okay, Prabhupada. Yeah. We're so fortunate to be sheltered by such an empowered and merciful acharya. So he's asked us to distribute these books and make... Yeah, Gurukul, there's so many ideas, so many projects Srila Prabhupada had for spreading Krishna consciousness. And practically, we've hardly realized very few of them. If we actually did what Prabhupada wanted us to do, whoa, what a movement. What a movement this would be. With completely different type of education, Gurukul system. Farm communities with millions of people, Krishna conscious, Varnashram, society, leaders of countries, you could imagine just like the Prime Minister of Britain, and this comes in and says, I'm sorry I'm late for the press conference. We can imagine the Prime Minister of Britain comes in. Sorry I'm late for the press conference, but I was behind on my rounds. I had to catch up on my rounds. When will that day come? The Prime Minister should be... No one should go to the Parliament before chanting their rounds. First of all, you have to chant 16 rounds, then you can go in the Parliament. That day should be there. that vision Srila Prabhupada gave. So these things we should do. The preaching, Srila Prabhupada had confidence that we could present this Bhagavad philosophy to scientists, change the mistaken understanding of the world. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. The mistaken understanding that there's no God, there's no basis to the world, everything is just going on just like that with no God. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to change all this. He gave solid theism, real understanding of God, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, the scientific knowledge of who is God and everything about Him. So we're distributing these books. It's part of a spiritual revolution. Since Srila Prabhupada left, the revolution's it's going on, but it's not in the same, not with the same charge. So we should get that charge back. Charge against Maya. Don't retreat. We shouldn't have too many of these japa retreats. We should have more Sankirtan attacks, going out, distributing the books, doing Harinam everywhere, festivals, Rath Yatra, everything. Bringing, of course, we also need to chant our rounds, all these things, but this movement is meant for changing the face of this misdirected civilization. And if we stick to what Srila Prabhupada gave us, certainly that will come about. So go on distributing the books. That's the most basic activity in this Sankirtan movement, for changing the world, for giving people the knowledge that they've forgotten for so many lifetimes. People have forgotten Krishna. Maya mugda jiva nahi shata Krishna gyan. Jibere kripa koile Krishna bedpuran. People, they automatically by themselves, they're not going to know about Krishna. So Krishna very mercifully made these shastras in the form of Vyasadeva. He made these shastras. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mokaro navayam vichara yamaha. Hare Hare Rasa Madira Madati Mata Bhuvivilo Tama Natama Nirvishama Dante Nidhaya Chunakam Padiya Nipatya Krit Vachaka Kushatameda Rahambravimi. He sadhava sakalameva vihaya duran chaitanya chandra charane kurutanu ragam vanchakalpa tarubhyas chakripa sindhavya vachapatitanam bhagam.